Kia ora, and welcome to Family, Whānau and Disability, a podcast brought to you by Parent to Parent New Zealand. We are here for the many Kiwi families out there caring for a disabled child or family member. We know the journey caring for a disabled or a neurodiverse child is not an easy or a straightforward one. So this podcast is a place to explore the issues that affect us, to share stories, swap tips, and even have a laugh or two. We would love for you to join us each month, so make sure you subscribe. Please also be aware that the views shared are those of the individual and may not represent the views of parent to parent.
This podcast is brought to you by Parent to Parent. Please note, any views or opinions expressed by the speakers are of the individual speakers themselves and do not necessarily represent Parent to Parent as an organisation.
Welcome to Connect, Inform, Support on Free FM 89.0. Brought to you by Parent to Parent, the not-for-profit organisation supporting families and whānau of babies, children, teens and adults with any type of disability or health impairment.
Hi there, welcome to Connect, Inform, Support. My name is Louise and I'm your host today as well as being the producer. I am a parent of three children aged 8, 10 and 12. And I'm the sort of parent who likes to read everything I possibly can to find out exactly what I'm supposed to do. Because these kids didn't come with a manual, as I'm sure you know. So I took it upon myself to learn as much as I possibly could about parenting. I went on parenting courses, I read books, I watched YouTube clips, I read magazines. And now my oldest is heading into that pre-teen era. I wanted to get myself clued up on teaching my kids about sex and relationships in a way that was open and honest and frank without being, you know, age inappropriate or making them uncomfortable. But, you know, talking to your parents about sex makes you uncomfortable as a teenager. It's kind of par for the course. So I've gone and looked up some websites and found myself some resources. And since working at Parent to Parent, I've become a lot more conscious of what resources there are in the world for people with disabilities. And I have noticed that most of the books that I've read in terms of teaching kids about sex, things like Where Did I Come From? What's Happening to Me? Things like that, don't have any mention of disability. However, I did find one book that is aimed at teens and above. And it's done by a lady called Heather Coroner, who also runs a website called Scarleteen, which is one of my favourites. And it's a very sex-positive, friendly website aimed at teenagers wanting to learn more about every possible aspect of sexuality. And there are loads of resources and loads of information on there specifically about disability and about managing a healthy sex life and about consent and all the other things that you need to know. So I will put a link to that in the show notes because I think it's a fantastic resource. I'm a big believer of parents teaching their kids about where babies come from and sex, but I know that some parents feel very uncomfortable with doing that and don't quite know where to start. So I fully support my school in bringing sex education into the curriculum as early as possible. I think it is vital for children to know right from day one where babies come from, as soon as they start asking, basically. If they're old enough to ask the question, they're old enough to know the age-appropriate answer. That's my personal opinion. So I'm all about educating. I'm all about giving information. And I've also taught my kids, and I'll keep teaching them, that education is not permission. Just because I tell you about this stuff and explain it to you and answer your questions doesn't mean I am giving you permission to go out and do it. Same goes for any other thing that I would teach them about, alcohol, drugs, smoking, whatever. I will answer their questions, but that doesn't mean they get to do the thing, or that doesn't mean that I approve of them doing the thing. So I think that's an important distinction to make when you're talking to your kids. Understand that you can teach them and give them this information, but make it clear right from the start that if this is something that you would not want them to be doing, you can make that clear without frightening them into compliance. Just let them know about legalities and about consent and about safety. And the more education the kids have, the more likely they are to make relatively informed choices. I mean, we've all done dumb stuff as teenagers, regardless of whether you have any kind of disability or neurodiversity going on. Teenagers are going to do dumb stuff. it's kind of a rite of passage in a way. So if we as parents can accept that that is quite likely to happen, but give our teenagers and our kids as much information as possible so that they go with their eyes open into situations, knowing full well the potential consequences, and also knowing that we will come rescue them if they need us to, that they can phone us at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, I did something dumb, I went to a party, I got myself into a situation, I need to come home, and we will go get them. I think the best thing we can do is make sure that our kids know that we are there for them and that we will do our best to teach them and keep them safe and to teach them how to keep themselves safe as far as possible. The message I get from that is pretty much a universal message with regard to relationships, is about communication. And I remember my mum telling me as a teenager that if I'm not old enough to talk about it to my partner, I shouldn't be doing it with my partner, which is a pretty good message. So talk to people, ask questions, make it clear what you want. And this all comes back down again to consent and informed consent and affirmative consent. We all know theoretically that no means no, but I think we need to flip that argument to be yes means yes, and that consent is only when someone freely gives it and continues to give it. So that means if someone changes their mind halfway through, that's absolutely fine. It might be frustrating, it might be distressing, but they are allowed to do that, and they're allowed to say stop, no, I've had enough of this, or they're allowed to say, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And we have to accept that and understand that. Teaching children about consent is an interesting topic. The way I did it with my kids was before they started talking about relationships or anything, while they were still quite young, we taught them consent through the tickle game, where you tickle your kid and when they say stop, you stop, and you don't start again until they ask you to start again. And we teach them that whenever they say stop, we would stop and we would listen to them, and that we would not touch them without their permission. I also explained to them the concept of informed consent, using the analogy of bungee jumping, where I said, say your friend wants you to go bungee jumping, and they tell you all about it. They tell you what's involved, what the risks are, what you have to do, what sort of equipment, where you're going to be, what it's like, and they show you a video maybe, or they tell you all about it, and you feel like, yeah, you might want to give this a go. That's called informed consent. And you can get to the top of that bungee platform and change your mind, and that's absolutely fine. I said, but if your friend takes you to the top of a bungee tower and ties some elastic around your ankles and pushes you off, they don't have your consent, and that's not okay. And my kids looked at me and went, I'm never doing bungee jumping. But the idea is you can teach kids the concept of bodily autonomy and consent in an age-appropriate, comprehension-appropriate way. So whatever issues your child may face, I think it's really important to teach them that they have agency over their own body, that they are in charge of who touches them and who doesn't, and that you as an adult will respect that, and you expect other adults to respect that. And if your kid ever feels that another adult or another child is not respecting that, then they know they can come to you and say, hey, this person touched me without my permission, I don't like it. And they know that you will believe them and you will listen to them and you will help them. I think that's absolutely vital. We also have to be aware of the culture of victim blaming in the world, that quite often people will look at women dressed up in high heels and short skirts and say that they're asking for it and all this kind of thing. This is wrong. We need to stop this. We need to flip it around and say, teach your children, your boys and your girls, but your boys especially, that it is not okay to assume somebody owes you something because of the way they dress, because of the words they say, because of the way they act around you, because you've bought them a drink or because you've bought them dinner. Nobody owes you sex, ever. Something a teacher once told me about kids and about behaviour is that all anybody wants is to be heard. And I think that's vital when it comes to teaching your children about looking after themselves, about keeping themselves safe, and about speaking up when something feels wrong. If we listen to our kids, as much as is humanly possible. Yes, I know sometimes they just don't shut up and you want them just to be quiet about Thomas the Tank Engine or dinosaurs for 5 minutes. But if we listen to our kids and show them that we are prepared to hear what they have to say, even if we don't necessarily give them what they want or do what they want, if we listen to them, they are much more likely to trust us and come to us in future with other things that they feel they need to talk about. So if your kid comes and tells you some random stuff and you just think you can't be bothered or whatever, yeah, listen. If your kid's exhibiting challenging behaviour and you just want to shout at them and tell them to stop, if you can, just take a breath. Take a breath and think, this behaviour's come from somewhere. This kid wants to be heard. And just take 5 minutes to sit down with your kid and go, hey, dude, you seem really angry about this. What's going on? And sowing those seeds of trust right in the beginning, when your kids are really little, will mean that as they get older and as they head towards their teens and as they start to break away from that dependence on their parents and start to want to become independent people, they are more likely to feel comfortable coming to you and talking to you about more troublesome issues. It's never too early to start teaching your kids about trusting you to talk to them and answer their questions. You can even set aside a certain time of day. I spend 5 minutes in the evenings after the kids' lights out, I go and say goodnight to them. And if they have something they want to talk to me about, they get that one-on-one time, 5 minutes each, when it's just them and me. The brothers and sisters are in their own bedrooms. They don't get to listen in. If it's particularly private, we close the door and we talk quietly. So my kids always know that if they want to talk to me in private, they say, hey, Mummy, I need to talk to you in my room. And we go and talk. And a lot of the time, it's something fairly innocuous. But I know, and they know, that they can talk to me about this stuff, about anything. And that they can do it in private without other people listening, so they don't have to be embarrassed. And they can ask me anything, and they know that I'm completely unshockable. And they also know that I'm on their side. And I will believe them if they tell me something. And I will be on their side and back them up.
Live our memories, there will
My own kids are, as far as I know, neurotypical and don't have any disabilities that I'm aware of. So I'm very conscious that I speak from a place of both inexperience and potential privilege. I recognise I have privilege as an able-bodied person and a parent of kids who are neurotypical and able-bodied. I know I'm going to make mistakes, I'm going to make assumptions, and I'm going to get things wrong, so please feel free to correct me. We are going to set up a dedicated email account for the podcast at some point in the future, hopefully. But in the meantime, if you go to the Parent to Parent website, that's parenttoparent.org.nz, and that's Parent to Parent with a number 2, not the word 2, so parent, number 2, parent.org.nz. There is a contact method through the website, and there's a free phone number you can call as well. I'm really keen to hear from people within the disability sector, both people with disabilities themselves, carers of people, parents, siblings, all of the people that Parent to Parent support, because we are a family-wide organisation. We are here to, like the name suggests, connect, inform and support. We connect families and people together to form a sense of community so that people don't feel so alone in the world. We provide good quality information and evidence-based research on thousands of disabilities, and we're always learning more. Our researchers are always keeping on top of current science and keeping us all up to date. I've learned ever such a lot since I first started here. I've learned a heck of a lot about myself as a parent and about disabilities and about my own innate prejudices and bias that I wasn't even aware of a lot of the time. As a teenager, I was quite aware of my own biases about being able to speak to somebody in a wheelchair without either patronising them or treating them differently. And I mentioned in an earlier podcast that I worked in a residential home for disabled students when I was 18 as a volunteer carer. And that opened my eyes as a fairly privileged teenager as to a little bit of the world that I was very unaware of. I'm still in touch with a few of the people that I met there, so that's pretty cool. What I want for this podcast is to be both a tool for Parent to Parent to get their information out to more people in a new way, and to share information and to talk to people and to gather that sense of community around us a little more, and to spread it a bit further as well. I'm hoping that this podcast will get out to people who would otherwise not necessarily engage with Parent to Parent. I'm also hoping that people who aren't necessarily connected to the disability sector will listen to it and will learn something, as I've learned something. I feel that I have a duty to educate people like me about acceptance and about understanding and about accessibility, and to just take people into account and think about people outside your own little bubble. One of the biggest debates going on at the moment is about disposable straws, and as an ecologist and environmentalist, I was absolutely dead against plastic straws and was all for a big ban, a nationwide ban, and they're terrible things and they hurt turtles. And then I spoke to a lady called Jess Tom in the UK who has Tourette's syndrome. She's known as Tourette's Hero. I'll put her website in the show notes. And she pointed out to me that as a person with a disability and with tics, physical tics, she is unable to drink a drink without a straw. Like, physically, she cannot drink without a straw. So if she goes out with her friends and there are no straws available, then she can't have a drink. And it just blew my mind that there are people out there who need these simple little plastic things that I was so dead against to stay hydrated and to live a normal life. So I've completely turned my opinion about disposable plastic straws around, and my stance now is that I feel they should be available on request, and wherever possible, people should be buying either biodegradable or reusable washable straws to take with them. I recognise this is not possible for everybody, and I recognise that some of the reusable straws out there are not suitable for everybody, but I personally have bought some metal straws with a little straw cleaner that I'm planning to take out and about with me to do my bit. And I think all of us people who are capable of doing so ought to do so and reduce the amount of waste that's produced by these plastic straws in the environment, and take into account the fact that there are people out there who need them to access food and drink. And that's another thing I hadn't even thought of, is that a lot of people have to eat using a straw because they can't chew for whatever reason, so they eat liquid foods. So if they're out on a day out with friends and family and they order soup and there's no straws available, then they can't eat. And I found that a bit of a mind-blowing moment, that because it's not in my frame of reference, it doesn't even occur to me. So I'm trying to educate people like me to think outside your own little box, to do stuff to make the world a more accessible place for everybody. I mean, we can build ramps instead of stairs, and then people who normally use stairs can still use ramps, and then people who can't use stairs can use ramps. It's like when I was talking to Justine Brockback about inclusive education, she was saying if we build for the margins in society, then we cover everybody. So if we take into account all the possibilities, then the people who don't have difficulties are not going to be negatively affected. And I think a lot of people forget that in order to make accommodations and to make places accessible, we are not taking anything away from people who don't have accessibility issues. Building a ramp does not stop people who normally walk upstairs from getting into a building. Having a wider doorway to fit wheelchairs in does not stop people who can get through a normal sized doorway going into the building. Having hearing aid loops in a cinema, having captions on a screen, does not take anything away from the people who don't have hearing difficulties, but it includes so many more people who otherwise would not be able to enjoy that event. So we need to be aware of people outside our own little bubble. We need to break out of our little blobs and start thinking about other people. And I mean, I know we can't save the world. I know I can't do everything for everybody. But if every person just stopped and thought, is this accessible? Is this thing that I'm doing accessible to most people, including those people on wheels, or those people on crutches, or those people who have a visual impairment, or those people who have a sensitivity to noise? Are there things in place that make this accessible to everybody? And if everybody just thought a little bit like that every day when they're doing something, then it would just make people a lot more open and aware. Well, I think the trouble is people who don't have a disability just can't be bothered a lot of the time. It's an effort. It's an effort to think about somebody else. It's an effort to go, oh, we need to put captions on this video for YouTube. We need to change the lighting in here because it affects people with sensory sensitivity. We have to do something now, and I include myself in this group of people. We're all lazy. We don't want to change. It involves making a tiny effort on our part, and people don't want to, but we have to. At the end of the day, we are a social species. We need to embrace all members of the human race. We all need to look around ourselves and look after each other and look after and teach our kids that other people, no matter how different, are still people and deserving of love and respect. The more people who do that, the more people who raise kids to see that, the more people around the world are going to start looking at each other through different eyes and seeing each other as humans and seeing each other as people and worthy and not other and not and different, but different in a good way, different in a way that can be celebrated and enjoyed and learned from. It always baffles me when people don't want to learn more about other people's differences, because I'm the kind of person who I'm interested. I like people. I want to find out more about them. And yeah, maybe it's an effort on my part, but it's not exactly difficult. So do better, human beings. Do better.
Are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
And you, of tender years, can't know the fears that your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
Connect, inform, support. Join us next week on Free FM 89.0 for support and information from parent to parent. The program can be downloaded as a podcast, and of course you can get more information on our website, parenttoparent.org.nz.
This has been Family, Whānau and Disability from Parent to Parent. I have been your host, Johanna. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast and that you'll join us again soon.